New data shows that Oregon is lagging when it comes to child well-being. The Kids Count data book has just been released, and it ranks Oregon 25th nationally on some key areas. Experts warn that this is a critical time for Oregon children. Either the pandemic wipes out years of progress on financial insecurity and educational achievement, or it's an opportunity to reinvest in the state's youngest generation. I spoke with Jennifer Wagley, the executive director of Our Children Oregon, to learn more about what the data tells us, how children are faring, and what policy changes can improve the well-being of the next generation. Can you tell me a little bit about Our Children Oregon? What does that organization do?
Yeah, Our Children Oregon is close to a 30-year-old organization that has and does children's advocacy work, so whole child intersectional work to ensure that all children have a voice at in the legislative process here in Oregon, and to also, you know, kind of fight nationally to ensure that the needs of Oregon's kids are recognized when it comes to what's happening in Washington, D.C. as well.
And so obviously with that in mind, new data from the 2021 Kids Count data book was just released, and it shows that the pandemic has caused Oregon to fall behind in some of the key indicators of children's well-being. Obviously, we would expect that the pandemic would have an impact on children and families since it was such a colossal shift. But before we get into the most recent data, how were Oregon's kids faring before the pandemic, like in 2019?
You know, I think a lot of Oregonians would be surprised to know that we're not doing as well as I think we have in our mind as we should be doing. So we were middle of the pack. So we are at 25th nationally out of 50 states. And you know, I know that we can be better than that. And I think a lot of people don't understand what are some of the driving impacts of that. Our educational outcomes are one of the primary things that keeps us from moving up in that rank. And as an organization, our goal is to improve that rank and to fight for the policy solutions that'll bring us up to be a leader in the nation when it comes to child well-being. And so education is key. We are ranked, I think, 40th out of 50 states when it comes to educational outcomes. And we know that there's been recent investments into our education system. And so our organization is just saying we've got to keep those investments in place. We've got to dig deep and make sure that we're doing the right investments, the right programs, the right interventions for the right kids. And I think you'll see in this data, the data from 2019 that we're showing, which does show that pre-pandemic look, is that not all outcomes are being achieved equally throughout the different racial and ethnic groups. And so we see disproportionality when it comes to many of the things that we track with our Black, Indigenous, people of color kids struggling because of systemic injustices and because of historical injustices. And so our organization is wanting to fight for targeted investments for those young people who were already struggling before the pandemic. And now with the pandemic, we know that that's had another additional disproportionate impact on those same kids.
Right. And so there are these four key areas that the study looks at that are the indicators of well-being for Oregonian kids and for kids, you know, around the U.S., which are economic well-being, education, affordable health care, and family and community. How are each of those important for children? How are we measuring those kind of indicators and the impacts they have?
Yeah, well, that's a big question. I mean, it depends on the indicator, of course, but these indicators are curated by the Annie Casey Foundation so that we can have a comparable look throughout both kind of time and also across states, right? So it's like what data is available for all children that we can look at and say, you know, hey, this state's doing something right. Because it's really not that Oregon wants to be another state and we want other kids to do worse, but we want us all to be improving. And so when it comes to educational outcomes, we're looking at literacy levels, right? So one of the metrics is fourth grade reading level. And in Oregon, 66% of fourth graders are not reading on level. To me, that's a crisis. To many advocates, that's a huge crisis. Nationally, there's a struggle with literacy. And so what are some of the solutions? And we have organizations here fighting for solutions that would improve those numbers. But that's one of the indicators in the education field that we track. In healthcare, you know, having insurance is really important for families, and it's really important for kids. And that's one of the bright spots in Oregon's data, is that with Cover All Kids, most of our kids have insurance coverage. In fact, we are, you know, in the top 10 when it comes to health insurance for kids, and we want to keep that going. And in fact, when we know that, you know, kids don't live in isolation, they have families, they have communities, and so right now in the legislative process here in Oregon, we're fighting for Cover All People, because we know that all people need access to quality health care that's affordable to them. And so that's an example of what's in health. Economics, you know, a lot of people throughout the years have talked about poverty. This is something that I think is super exciting, is that we have been doing a lot of the right policy investments to move the needle on poverty. And so between 2010 and 2019, we in here in Oregon brought poverty down by 41%. So 13% of our kids still remain in that category of being impacted by poverty. Right now, in this moment, in this nation, we're celebrating a big day today. This is the day that we're calling Child Tax Credit Awareness Day. And this is an investment by the federal government as a part of the relief packages that are coming out. But the Child Tax Credit is something that advocates have fought for and fought to have increased over time. Right now, families who some don't even have to typically file income taxes because they don't make enough money. So I don't know if that's kind of common knowledge, but some people don't file because their incomes are so low. They actually now need to file because they can qualify for this child tax credit. And it's a pre amount of money that'll be pulled throughout the year. If you have kids 6 and under qualify for a $300 a month tax credit. Children 7 plus till 18 years old qualify for a $250 a month tax credit. And this is going to hit and impact 90% of kids in this country. And we are super excited about the potential to cut, even in Oregon, if we're down to 13% of children impacted by poverty, imagine cutting that in half. Imagine families having the food, the resources to be able to pay their rent on time, to maybe even save a little bit. Imagine the potential of being able to cut child poverty in half. We're on the precipice of that with the child tax credit. And so now advocates, because of our love for kids and our knowledge of what families need to thrive, are fighting for that child tax credit that people need to take advantage of now. But we want it to be permanent. We believe that this should be an investment that our country, the wealthiest in the world, should make in all children, so that all children have the ability to reach their full potential.
That is really exciting. I don't think that I was necessarily present to what all of that would impact.
Yeah, and everybody should just go to childtaxcredit.gov. And so if you have a family member who's maybe not as plugged into the news cycle, or maybe isn't listening to this report right now, and you know that they could use an extra $300 a month, or if they have 3 kids, I mean, you know, we're talking about a significant investment. And this is really it speaks to the value that our federal government has for children and families, and what it really takes to have the healthy nation that we all dream of. So we want to point people to childtaxcredit.gov and make sure that every family gets the resources they need to weather the storm. And, you know, Athea, what we're really dreaming about is not just to weather the storm, but when we come out, we want a more equitable society. We want the disproportionality that we've experienced through generations, or through the inception of this country. We know how to change those systems. We know how to dismantle them, and we know what it takes to start again and to really reimagine the future. And so this child tax credit is one step in that right direction.
Yeah, and I want to dive into, you know, some of the policy, you know, strategies that could address this in a second here, but I want to talk specifically about what the new data says about Oregon kids. What are the changes that kids have been facing and continue to face as a result of the pandemic? What were some of the biggest takeaways of the data?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway of the data is that, you know, families that were struggling to make ends meet before, this has been an intense crisis. You know, a lot of people have said we are all in the same storm when it came to pandemic, but we are not all in the same boats weathering the storm. And that's what the data shows. The data shows that families that have historically been marginalized have a disproportionate number of folks that don't know if they can feed their kids. You know, so when we're looking at the numbers, you know, with the investments that we've seen in policies that have, like the CARES Act and the American Rescue Plan, that it is helping lead to recovery, but that those families that were already struggling the most, they're still falling behind. And so, and the things that we can all agree on that kids need, from healthcare to safe and stable housing, without more targeted investments into our BIPOC children and families, the racial and ethnic gaps that existed pre-pandemic are only going to worsen. And so, as an organization, we are fighting, even in the Capitol today, for targeted investments in our BIPOC families so that they too have the opportunity to reach their full potential.
And so you mentioned the child tax credit, making that permanent as one strategy that could be strong in addressing the issues that, you know, kids around the US are facing today. Are there other ones that come to mind or that your organization is interested in?
For sure, we are interested. It takes a lot to have thriving communities, and it takes us all leaning in together. But we also know that investments in public education, and we are so grateful for the investments that our state and the federal government is making in public education. And the call from advocates now is that, yes, keep that coming. Our school systems, so many of them were struggling before. They need that investment, but we also need to think about how to create a universal early child care system, a system that nurtures the smallest in our midst and allows families to make choices about their economic future, and frees women to pursue the things that they want to pursue, because we know that the pandemic has had a disproportionate impact of women on the workforce. And so early childhood is something that we are really fighting for investments in, so that we can create a system that not only honors the youngest in our society, but also honors those caretakers that have for years been impacted by low wages and lack of investment. We know that has to change.
I want to ask kind of an esoteric question now, and I wonder what you think about it. So, thinking big picture, right? What is the ultimate goal? What does it look like when children and families get the support that they need in the areas that we've talked about? Or is there a state that's achieved that in your mind?
That is a really esoteric question and really bold, because, you know, I wonder, you know, if as a country, if we were not, you know, racing to have the most gross domestic product, but we're really racing to be number one in well-being for our children, what that would mean. Because when you look at us as a country compared to other nations throughout the world, in fact, if you look at the 38 wealthiest countries, we are ranked 36 out of 38 for overall child well-being. The United States of America. There's another kind of, you know, one of those, like, how is that true in this country? A lot of it is based on our past. And so, you know, what would child well-being look like if we were really leaning into that and making that true? It would mean that every child had a safe, stable, affordable house to call home. So they didn't have to change schools because they have to, you know, change apartments or they're couch surfing. It would mean that every belly was filled with nutritional food, maybe that they've grown in their own container gardens or in their own gardens, so that they're learning the connection between food and health. And I mean, well-being would be understanding that we're all in it together, the interconnectedness of who we are. We talk about child well-being, but if we don't think about our elders, who are we really as a society, right? So this is intergenerational work, and that's why I feel like with the crisis of the pandemic, we have been given this tremendous opportunity to reimagine, to rebuild, and to come together in a new way to talk about who and what is it that we really want to be as a society. Is the GDP really the measure of success? Well, if our children aren't doing well, from me, that's not success. Success is that every family is thriving together, that we're leaning in together collectively and building a healthy, sustainable future where everyone can reach their full potential.
That's a great answer, and I appreciate you taking on that question. So if listeners are interested in learning more about this issue, is there a best way for them to do that?
Well, we would invite people to come to our website. It's www.ourchildrenoregon.org. And, you know, the name of our organization was chosen from the perspective of we want every child to be loved and nurtured as if they are our child, right? How do we care for the children if we are parents that we get to care for? And so visit us, our website, and you can learn more about the data there. You can see some of our the briefs. You can also get involved in the legislative process and learn what bills we're fighting for and why we're fighting for them. So many of us get disconnected from that kind of public sector, and we see a lot of what's wrong with the public sector, and we really forget to celebrate that our tax dollars, I mean, here in Oregon, we've helped every child almost in this state have insurance. That's something to celebrate. The public sector does so much good, and that's our tax dollars investing in the common good. And a lot of the policy solutions, like the child tax credit that we're advocating for right now, is really about how do we strengthen a safety net for the common good of all in this state and throughout this country. So visit our website, learn more. You know, if you, again, I want to point people to the childtaxcredit.gov so that we can make sure that families are tapping into that resource to help stabilize and hopefully give them enough support so that they can imagine a beautiful future for themselves and their children.
That was Jennifer Wagley, the executive director of Our Children Oregon. We've been speaking about the new data from the Kids Count data book and what it tells us about Oregon kids and how they can be better supported. Find more information and links related to this story on our website, kbu.fm. For KBU News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.